Welcome back to another episode of That Fitness Business Podcast. And today we are talking about essential habits for online coaches in the fitness industry. Hello, Dan. How are you today?
Hi, Tom. I'm good today. Very good.
Yeah. How was your thing on Friday? You had a meeting of minds, didn't you?
Energized. Yeah. Buzzing after that. Just those days fill me with joy. And they're just, they just take a lot out of me as well. At the same time, it's this confliction of like, I love doing them, and then it takes me a day to decompress. So Saturday was just spent like reflecting on it all. But yeah, and then when I get to Monday, I'm thriving off it, because
yeah,
just think back to some really cool to get people together, great input on all different areas of things, different talks, loads to think about. And then when you get the feedback from people, that makes me even happier, because you're like, right, yeah, it's been worth it.
Yeah,
it's a big thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I just get the same from going to like the Dent when they had the meetups every month in London. And it was absolutely knackering, because I had to get on the train like 6 o'clock in the morning or whatever it was, get the train to London, and then negotiate my way through the tube to the venue, a whole day of training and, you know, business stuff. And then get on the tube at 5 o'clock, great. And on the train back home to Bristol. So it was a lot of traveling, but always used to come away like super energized and focused and ready to do more in my business.
Yeah, it drives me forwards. I'm so pleased that we make them like a common thing now, because I look forward to that. It's different meeting people in person.
Yeah. You don't get it from I know we're obviously online coaches, but you just don't get that same buzz from an online like webinar or whatever else. Do you, meeting people in person is a real, because we're humans, it's that thing, isn't it?
Yeah, thoroughly enjoyed it. And think that, just, I say we're going on a tangent, but I was thinking back to when we started doing them. I used to get on a train with like my two bags, the bag for life's full of like Monster and protein bars, and I had my mobile whiteboard that I took with me. I lost that on the train once, left it on there. And I used to carry that all the way through London, through the underground and stuff to get there, walk all the way to the venue. And then now I think about on Friday, I have to drive now, because we take so much stuff. I was like, it's cool to think about where these things start and then where they are at the moment. I think. So yeah, that's just a little tangent.
Right. How'd you get all that stuff in your Ferrari?
Yeah, to put it in the passenger seat. Yeah.
Drag it on a trailer behind. A Ferrari trailer. So anyway, so we're talking about essential habits today, because there's a lot at the moment about morning routines, and I suppose that's been something, a topic for a lot, you know, forever, hasn't it? You know, what's your best morning routine to optimize your day and all that sort of stuff, but also habits in the day, things that you do in the day to keep yourself energized, how you conduct your work, habits for productivity. And so we're going to, obviously, there's a lot of topics here. So we're going to not go deep dive into one or two. We're just going to talk about loosely about others. And maybe we'll do deep dives on other podcasts, because it is massive topics. And each header, each like topic title has a lot of stuff we could talk about. But because it's a hot topic, and it's something people are talking about, we thought, yeah, we'll talk about our stuff. So I suppose there's two habits, isn't there? There's like essential habits, which have you can measure the result, can't you? So if I produce this much content, if I have this many conversations a day, I can see this, my sales going up. Yeah. And then you have intangible habits, where you don't really see the benefit of them because there's no way to measure them. You know, so like if I have a green tea in the morning, does that make me a better coach? Does that give me more clients at the end of the day? So I think there's a line there. And the thing is, people always say, oh, I don't see the reason why you do that, because there's no tangible reason, like you don't get anything from it.
Yeah.
And I think that's an important thing to go into as well, is that there is always something that potentially makes you feel better, which is why you perform better.
Yeah. So there's no, you can't quantify that through data, but then the data could be that you feel a certain way after doing that, or your green tea gives you that energy, or it even might act as a way to channel into a certain part of your day. Because there's that, do you know what I mean by this, where we've got certain things that then denote, okay, I'm now going into this part of my day, which we'll probably talk about in terms of some of the areas that we'll go into. But so, like, for example, at the end of the day, going into from finishing work into like relaxing downtime or whatever it is, you should have a bit of a transition rather than just going, well, I finished going into this.
Yeah.
So things like that can act as it, can't they? They can act as like these breaks to transition into the next part of your day.
Yeah. And I suppose there's something we also missed there was, and this is bro science habits. And this is the ones that are the people will say, oh, you should do this because this evidence says this is great. When actually the evidence around it is rather sketchy and it's not conclusive. You know, we obviously know loads of those in the fitness industry about like diet fads and all that sort of stuff. But that has also made its way into like habits and routines and optimization schedules and all this stuff. Like, do you remember that? I'm not sure if it's still a thing. Showing your butthole to the sun every morning was supposed to like make you feel better.
Yeah.
Do you ever try that?
Perineal tanning or something.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, yeah.
I've never tried it, but I've laid in the sun multiple times and I've felt quite nice. So I can imagine it feeling all right, but it's just, I don't know where I'd actually do that, because if I do it in the back garden, we're definitely, someone will see from maybe this side. So
yeah,
I don't know where I'm going to get the right environment really.
Tell you what you need, one of the optimization butthole tanning tents that you can buy online. It's basically a Wendy house, but it costs £400.
It's with a hole in the roof.
Yeah. it's got Dora's Wendy house crossed out and optimization butthole chakra sunlight procedure or something like that written on it. And yeah, it's just a Wendy house with the top cut off, but it's £500.
Dangerous though. That actual practice is obviously dangerous.
Dangerous.
For many reasons. But from a skin cancer point of view, potentially, because that area doesn't get seen by sunlight that much.
No, not unless you're a regular practitioner. Maybe it's supposed to build up your resistance to butthole sun exposure.
Either way, it's freaking weird. That's what I mean. That's, well, I guess what we're getting at here is like, yeah, that stuff doesn't, I mean, even things like that, if it makes you feel good, then fine. But my thing is like, why does then that have to become a thing that is like, why do I now know about that? I don't really.
What have you searched online to find out about that?
Why is that a thing now? And I'm like, oh my God, this is actually happening. If you want to do that and you get something from it, then just keep it to yourself. Like, and it's fine. You know, we can all do these things. And it's almost like, oh, I found this amazing thing. I'm going to have to tell everyone about it because this is the best way to optimize your day or to start your morning by jumping in freezing water or whatever it is. Like that might be great for you. However, like, just carry on and enjoy it. But then don't then push that onto people, because that's that thing, isn't it? Where you're starting to get, especially from a nutrition world, where you're like, no, this is the best diet. This is the best way for you to be healthy. And this is how you're going to optimize your health by removing carbohydrates. Cool. So then I'm going to tell everyone they need to remove carbohydrates. I just feel like that's the same thing that happens in this habit and routine world now.
Well, the other thing that happens is that, say, because you know, when you start a new diet, you get this motivation and it's like, yeah, yeah, it's good. And especially with like, things like keto, like you're saying, people start keto diets and immediately they see the results, weight loss because of carbohydrate and water and everything else. We all know why people see immediate results with keto, and the people think, well, that's great. So they get this motivation to be more adherent to their diet. And that's why they sort of battle through the next 3 or 4 weeks of feeling like death until actually ketosis sets in and they hopefully get some progress. It's a similar thing with these sort of weird habits. It's like, oh, I've started to submerge my head in dog shit every morning. And they said at the beginning, it's like, it was really bad at the beginning, but now I'm okay. And actually, because I've submerged my head in dog shit first thing in the morning, nothing else worse can happen to me in the day. So I'm more productive and I take more risks. You could have probably achieved that by not putting your head in dog shit in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an extreme one, isn't it?
But it's I haven't seen that one just yet, by the way. But it's that thing about, you know, sometimes doing that new habit or that new thing, which has absolutely zero benefits at all, can then give you that motivation to do something else. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So it's not the habit that's doing it. It's you've just got more motivation. So is that worth it or not? Is that worth this? You know, is it worth jumping in ice every single morning just to get that motivation to be a king for the rest of the day?
Maybe it is for some people. I just feel like it's something that has been glamorized a little bit. It's like this thing now that if you do it, you're a part of this world of, I do this really hard thing in the morning and that's what sets me up. So I'm better than you now. We're not really. You just jump in some water in the morning. And I don't really care if you jump in water. If you love that, brilliant. More power to you. I'm going to get in my hot shower and I really enjoy that. So I don't get it, that side of things. But I just feel that when it's kind of then pushed onto you, it's the same as what's happening in that diet world. But I'd be honest here, like most people who have got these fancy routines in the morning would be better off just getting on with stuff, just be getting on with life. Because by the time you've got yourself hyped up into your ice bath and you've sat there for, I don't know, a minute, so I don't know how long people sit in there, they can't be long, can it? So you're sitting there, you've got to recover. I mean, there's just so many more things I would be doing.
Do you know the thing? I asked one of my friends about this, who's who I respect very much, and he's someone who has let's say he's been in some army group, which is quite special, and so he's done a lot of extreme type stuff, and he's been in, you know, situations. So I asked him about this, and he said, "Well, I've done cold showers for years. You know, I really like it." He said, "I don't do ice baths, but if I was going to do that, I would just run some cold water in my bath at home and get in my bath at home." You didn't see the you didn't see the need to jump in outside, you know.
Yeah, there is a status thing attached to it, definitely.
Yeah. So anyway, I think obviously it's a little bit of a off tangent there. But yeah, so I think there was some social media stuff there as well, isn't it? It's like I'm doing it for the social media likes.
Yes. Big status thing. Sorry.
Okay, so let's talk about real things people can do to improve their business. So one of the, I know we had a list, so we'll go for the little list we had. You got your list ready?
Yeah, sorry, mate.
Excellent. but so first one I've got on mine is chunking up or chunking work up. So, and this applies to things like YouTube videos, podcasts, if you do podcasts, emails, articles, social media. One of the biggest things I've done to improve my productivity was to get all my stuff in a row. So if I was like, if I got two YouTube videos or three YouTube videos to film over a month, I will get them all done in like a couple of hours on one day. So I'll film all the videos on one day. If I've got a load of like reels to make, I'll spend about an hour making up, like, say, the reels for next week, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I found by putting it all together and doing it all together, my focus is really good because I'm only focusing on that one thing for the next hour or so. But I get more output in terms of, like, say, if you've got to come back to it and I've got to create a reel now, because you've got to then open your laptop and do this and do this and do this to create the reel or your phone or whatever. So it's a long job. Whereas if you have three or four of those same things to do, you only have to open your laptop once, don't you, to create a reel?
Yeah.
Your phone once, and then you do it, and then you're finished.
Yeah, I agree with those, like chunking tasks together, batch creating stuff or batch tasks. Because if you do this as well, one main thing to think about is only focus on those tasks, like you just said. But if you do have things like your phone or whatever with notifications going off, I would just make sure that they are off, or how you turn them off, mute them for however long, because if your attention is then switched to another task, the ability for you to then switch back to that initial task, it will take you 30, 60 minutes to then switch back into that mode of focus. This came up on Friday, and it's definitely, I'm guilty of that massively. This has come up. I'll just go and deal with that. Go back to the original task. Just takes me ages to get back into it. So be deliberate with your tasks in terms of where you're going to put them and what the focus is, and then switch everything else off.
Yeah. I think the thing about your phone is, I suppose it's another sub habit. I'm not sure what you do with your phone, but all my notifications on my phone are off. So Facebook, Instagram, all that sort of stuff, all the notifications are off. I'll only know if someone's commented or whatever else if I actually go into the app to check. And that has been, and I turn off the notifications, like the pop-up, the banners on the phone, because it's like, and it's designed to get you onto the app. And you know, if you've got your phone next to you when you're doing some work, bing, oh, Dan's like my reel. Oh, I'll go and see, you know, and you go into it. And then all of a sudden you're down that, you know, that scroll of doom, aren't you?
That's it.
So, I mean, that's the biggest thing I tell all my clients, turn all your notifications off. You decide when you look at your emails, you decide when you look at your WhatsApp, you decide when you look at your Instagram, Facebook.
Yeah. I remember turning my notifications off, like, well, it must be 7-8 years ago now. But I still remember it. I remember the anxiety around, oh, but what if, like, and then now I just think anything that comes up, I'm like, notifications, no, off. Nothing can come up and pop up. Even like the little red numbers annoy the hell out of me, because why are they fucking red?
Like, yeah, 'cause it's urgent, obviously.
Someone's tagged me at everyone in a Facebook group.
Someone started a live butthole sunbathing session. Join now. It was a Zoom call.
Notifications is the easy one to do. Turn it off. You're not going to miss anything. It's fine.
Yeah. And then if you are going to check your emails, just do it twice a day. So first thing in the morning. Well, actually, no, don't do it first thing in the morning, because that sets you up potentially for a bad day. So I check my emails. Well, I won't check my emails until after we've done this podcast, which is, that's like 12 o'clock real time. So I check it at lunchtime, and then I'll check it, say, 5 or 6 o'clock. And that's it.
See, I'm different to you. I check mine probably more frequently. But then I have stuff like, I'm trying to get better at not doing it as frequently. And also like our Slack. I'm only now, this is like been working on this for probably months now, just trying to get better at, not because Slack to me is like, it's like email. It's now replaced email. And then I'm finding myself trying to get through all of the notifications in Slack. And then I've only just come into the real terms and understanding that they're never going to go away. They're always going to be there. So I'm trying to complete them. They just keep coming back. So like, you need to be okay with them. Just, you're never going to complete your like to-do list or whatever's there. It's not going to happen. But that's a real big realization for me, because I struggle with things like that. Like, I have to complete stuff that's done. I'm like, cool. And then look at it again. Oh shit, cool.
It's never ending, isn't it? Especially, and it's the same with social media notifications, isn't it? Scrolling. There's never an end. There's never like the end of the scroll. It just keeps on going and keeps on going.
Completed it.
Yeah. Okay. Also work focus periods. So we're talking about, you call it tomato time. I think the official name is Pomodoro technique. Just explain, because people haven't heard that, what it is.
So this is where we're working in like focused time blocks. So how we're using that is like the Pomodoro technique focuses around, like, you can set your tasks that you want to complete, and then you set a timer on there, and it will work in 25 minute focus time blocks. And then you have mini breaks. They're like 5 minute breaks. And then you have every three, you have a bigger break, which is 25 minutes. So you're not maybe working for any more periods of that time. And you can really focus on get work like completed. If you've got like a chunk of similar tasks you want to get done, like I still use this for like the coaching updates that we do. I use it when I'm creating presentations and talks, because it's a one task I'm dedicating that time to. And hands down, it is so effective, because as long as you use it properly, like, it's not no good just having it up there and you just, the timing's going and you're not paying attention to it, use it properly, because it will tell you the time you start and the tasks you've got. It will give you a time of when you're going to finish. So I can look at it and go, I'm going to have all this shit done by 10 o'clock, mega. If I didn't do it, there's a risk that I will do a bit of it, pick my phone up, call, I've done a bit of work, I'm going to scroll through here for a bit, and then I'll go, well, I'll do some more work. And then that'll take me till 1 o'clock to do the work. So yeah, it's definitely worth looking at stuff like that if you struggle with attention to tasks.
Yeah, there's a good book called Deep Work, which I listened to a little while ago. I think there's some other interesting techniques there about like how to get super focused. But you're right, that Pomodoro technique is brilliant. It works. I mean, I think I set myself 20-minute blocks because the way my OCD works is I like to have I don't like 5-minute finish times, that sort of thing. So I do 20 minutes and then have a break, and then do 20 minutes and then have a break. And that tends to lead me up to sort of, I think, about an hour and a bit, and then I have my lunch or whatever. So it works really well. I think you're right. If you allow yourself to get distracted, so if, let's say when you're working, don't have your phone right next to you.
Yeah.
And the way I analogize that is, you know, like if you're at your desk and you've got a snack pot next to you, you're always going to snack more, aren't you? You're always, yeah. And there's evidence to support that. If you've got snacks on your desk, you're going to snack more. Whereas if your snacks are like in the other room, in a cupboard, you're not going to go there, because actually getting up to go there is more hassle.
Yeah.
So you will wait until you actually need a snack.
Yeah.
And if you change snacks to phone, it's exactly the same thing.
Yeah, definitely. That the phone goes on airplane mode and then it goes out of my reach, because even if it's on airplane mode and it's, you can see it and you can see the screen, I'll put it either out of the way. So phone's the one for me. Even when I go to bed and the phone goes plugged in, it's on the other side of the room. I don't use my phone in bed. And I know loads of people who just, they're on their phone in bed. I'm like, just go to sleep. Just go to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah, and on that, if you have a, because a lot of people use their phone as an alarm, but the problem is you get like through the night, dzz, 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 you know, like little buzzes where people are texting you or like, you know, whatever. So rather than have your phone in as an alarm for when you get up, have an alarm, like an actual alarm clock, which you can just stick next to your bed, which then just sets an alarm. That's the sole purpose, is to set the alarm off.
Yeah, or just an old school alarm clock, and then your phone can go. Like, I used to have my phone in another room. I used to do that. You can have, but just, you can change the settings on the phone, can't you, and have it so it can be accessed. And you can still have emergency contacts. So if someone, you can put people on it who can still get through. If it's in that time where there's no notifications, you can still go, oh no, my wife can still contact me or whatever. So yeah. It's quite good if you want. Maybe you don't want that.
Peace and quiet.
Yeah. Something I was going to say though is there's an app called Opal. Have you heard of Opal?
No.
Really good app actually for time blocking specifically for it. And what you'll do is you'll put in the amount of time you want to focus on a task. It will block everything on your phone. It will block all your apps for that time. I'm pretty sure you can override it, but it's a bit of a chore to do. So things like that can help, maybe.
You know, one of my mates, Emil, who I used to train with years ago, who's now in Portugal, he used to do this sort of thing, but because he couldn't resist going on his phone, he used to have like a safe.
I've seen the safes. Yeah,
he could have a safe which he puts the phone in, but the problem is that he would put it in there and then he couldn't open it. The safe would not open until the time. So I think a few times he got caught out because he needed his phone, but he couldn't get the safe open.
Yeah, I remember seeing those safes. I remember when they came out.
Yeah,
it's like a good idea. But no, that app does the same thing. Yeah. Cool.
Okay, so moving away from sort of productivity stuff, your health as a priority, which is, you know, I'm pretty sure if I was to ask 100 coaches, you know, is your own workouts and your own nutrition top of your list or close to the top? After a bit of like and ah, and they'll probably say no.
Yeah. It's frustrating, isn't it? Because you're getting told by some people in the internet, You know, you need to prioritize your training comes first. That's what always prioritize. And then you've got other people going, well, if you wanted to make your business work, you wouldn't spend, you know, an hour in the gym, or every single day, you would dedicate some of that time to your business. And you're like, well, okay, which one is it? Well, I don't think it needs to be like one or the other. It's just find the balance for you. But knowing that having some dedicated time to your own health has massive impact on how you are productivity wise and also how you feel. Because I mean, I'm pretty sure you've probably been similar to me in terms of having high stress periods where, I mean, maybe not. I'll find that in a minute. But I've definitely had high stress periods where I've taken my foot off the gas in terms of how I look after myself. Yeah. And that's then come back to bite me. And I'm just, you know, burnt out, or you know, you start getting ill, you start getting sick. And that's not, you can't do anything then. So you've got to be aware of it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I've definitely been in that situation where I've had like a lot on. Yeah, especially around the lockdown time when we were trying to get the gym back open, and you know, we were working 12-hour shifts to do the renovations and stuff like that, and there was just no time to train. And that was about 3 or 4 weeks. And even though I was in the gym, I obviously wasn't training because it was a building site. And it was, yeah, I didn't train for about 3 or 4 weeks, and I felt massively burnt out, and because there wasn't any sort of like, you know, I wouldn't call it relaxation time, because the gym shouldn't be like relaxation time, but it's like relaxation, but exertion. I don't know what the right word for that would be. You know, it's your private time where you're then exercising to feel better. All the people I talk to in terms of the people who come into my Build Body program, you know, they're like normally business owners, you know, that sort of thing, very sort of busy professionals. And I ask them, I say, well, when do you train? Oh, when I get around to it. Sometimes I can train after work, you know, sometimes I train before work if I haven't got, but sometimes I have to go on site or whatever. It's like, you're trying to fit your workouts around your life. And yeah. I remember we talked about work-life balance before in the previous podcast, where I've got non-negotiables that go into my day. So like my time with Jacob is obviously, you know, non-negotiable. And then my workouts is the second one. So time with Jacob, and then I put my workouts in. Because for me, okay, it's not just because I'm a bodybuilder, but being healthy and being, you know, I've done something productive for me today. Now I'm feeling fresh. Now I'm feeling 100%. Now I can focus on my business and other people's, you know, businesses.
Yeah, you definitely notice it when you've done something like that. I'm completely different, and I then notice if I haven't, because I need to get better at that. I definitely need to get better at non-negotiables for my own training, because I'll push that, or I'll just move it, or I'll do something else. So I found as I've worked at home now, what I will do is I have a non-negotiable to get outside at least once a day, because if I can't train, then I'm going to at least get outside. I'll try and do that anyway every single day. Just some kind of access, because before working at home, I was probably on average, I reckon I could clock up 12,000-15,000 steps without even like thinking about it. Now it's less than 3 on average. That's where it's at. And that's the difference, really. So being aware of that is a big thing for me. But I need to get better at the training side of it.
Yeah, I think the and down from that is that I find anyway that I go to the gym more often or with more enthusiasm if I have a plan to follow.
Yeah.
So like, you know, like you'd be better off with your business if you have a business plan. Yeah. You're better off with your health if you have a health plan. You know, so what is my training for today? And a lot of people, especially, and this is where like fitness coaches really fall down, is that they'll design all these plans for the people, but then they go into the gym. What am I doing today? Oh, I don't know. I just did a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You know, I'm a coach, so I know how to design a workout. And then you just do a lot of potter about. You don't really get a decent workout in. You're just stamping the card and you haven't really feel as if you've fulfilled anything. If you've got, right, these are the exercises. This is what I've got to do. This is the weight I've got to lift. And I'm doing that. You feel more fulfilled coming out.
Yeah, definitely. Best thing I've ever done is have coaches. Well, I always worked with coaches. But I had a period of time where I didn't. And it was exactly what you just said. I would like go to a gym, do what I wanted. And okay, for probably about 2 or 3 weeks, it was actually quite fun. And then it just became like, I don't really know. I'm going to the gym. I don't really know what I'm doing here. And then I started working with one of the guys who works with me now in the mentoring. And we were coming up with the whole thing around like describing who he works with and his ideal client, everything. It was like he was describing me to the absolute T. And I remember going on holiday and I said to Ashley, I'm just going to message Tom and book a call in with him. And then I started working with him because I was like, it was like you were talking to me. It was like you were looking into me. Best thing I've ever done, because that, yes, I could program my own sessions, but I don't want to. I'm not bussed.
Yeah. It's almost like a busman's holiday sort of thing, isn't it? It's, you know, one of the reasons I got out of in-person personal training was that I would train like 4 or 5 people in a day and then come to my own workout. I'm like, I've already done this 5 times today, like yeah. essentially, and just had no motivation. So once I got rid of all my my in-person training clients, training just went through the roof because now I'm fresh. I'm thinking about my own workouts more.
Yeah.
Not that I'm saying people should get rid of their clients, of course, but it's that thing is that if you've got something, if you don't have to think about it yourself and someone else is doing it for you, or you've got a pre-programmed plan, it becomes a lot easier.
I'm like smashing the room up here. I also think they on a different level to this, if you are a coach, you should value the input of a coach anyway. You should value that kind of thing. So why wouldn't you have someone give you input or at least help you?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so here's one I've got here, which is potentially, the way I remember it is this phrase, but it's not what I say that people should do. And that's tell more people to fuck off. Now, that's an easy way for me to remember to say, don't say yes to everything.
Yeah.
And the reasoning behind that is that we want to help people. As coaches, we want to help people. We want to be, you know, doing the positive things for people. The problem is that because of that, we often say yes to pretty much everything. And that then means we're saying no to something that potentially could help us improve our business or improve our life or give us more time back in terms of our social life. And I think so many people just say yes to too much stuff, become overworked, become anxious, and then they can't get those jobs done. So actually nothing gets done.
Yeah. I've definitely been there. You're better off, and if you're the better person is the people you can say and actually not, that learn to say no to more of these things. Yeah, I agree with that massively. Because you don't want to be in that position anyway, where you're just saying yes to everything and then become massively overworked, overwhelmed, and you also can't then deliver because you're just taking too much on, and it has a detrimental effect anyway to what you're trying to do. What's the point?
So a practical implication or a practical application of this is, you know, people who have like 24/7 WhatsApp support, you're saying yes to everything because you're saying your client can contact you at any time. You're not saying, no, you can't contact me after 7 o'clock or before 7 o'clock.
No.
And if you consider that, like how, you know, when people talk about like people booking in for like consultations and stuff like that, And you get this back and forth of messages. Oh, what time can you do? Can you do this time? Can you do this time? Can you do this time? And then the guy's, oh, I can't do any of those times. And then you have to think, oh, I have to have this person in my coaching. So then you create a time, which is like 8 p.m. at night or something like that, which is a completely irrelevant time. It's a time you wouldn't normally see someone. Have a Calendly link or, you know, or other free software where you say, right, I see clients between these times.
Yeah.
And then if they can't book on for those times, they're not the right client for you. That's the red carpeting. You must be able to have contacts between these times.
Yeah. That was a big thing, and it still is, I think, for personal trainers, because they would get to work with them and then start asking about their schedule and what their week looks like. And I was like, can people just book in with you anytime, like any day, anytime, whatever you do, you just got it open. They're like, yeah, I'll just do sessions on this day, sessions here. I'm like, why don't you just have these days and this part of the day where you're going to do these sessions and then go and block that out? And then they're like, well, what if someone can't do that? I'm like, well, that's not your problem. These are the sessions. Otherwise, your day, your week, your whole diary, your business is being run by your clients. It's not being run by you. like take the control back and go, actually, no, this is the time. And the amount of people I've worked with who have done that is mad.
And the reason is because you want to help people. And also you're afraid of losing money because because you've got to have all your clients as you possibly can. But actually what I found is when I condensed my diary down and I said, well, it's these times, and there's a lot of time that people can book in. It's not like, you know, 30 minutes on a day or whatever. So they can book in at those times, and you send people the link and you say, look, here's the link, book in at a time that suits you. And that way they pick a time, and it's actually brilliant because people go, yeah, that's fine, I've booked in. And it just solves all that problem. But also you're dictating the terms of your business. The other good thing is it also shows people that you're actually in demand because they can't book on certain days and they can't book at certain times. Imagine if you saw you went to this high ticket coach and he's saying, yeah, book in. And then Monday to Friday is like every time from like 6 a.m. through to 6 p.m. you can book in. You would go, that guy's not very busy. I wonder why. Whereas if it's only between, say, 11 and 2 on a Monday, Wednesday and Friday, then it's like, oh, he must be busy other times.
Yeah.
So there is a little bit of subconscious sort of signaling there as well, but it saves you time.
Yeah, big time. Agree.
Okay. What about outsourcing and delegating, Dan? And this comes into something called the Queen Bee Theory. And I know we had a quick chat about Queen Bee Theory beforehand. And if you've, there's a guy called Michael McCallowitz who wrote a book, I think it's called Clockwork, and there's another one called Profit First. And he talks about the Queen Bee Theory, where it's the person at the top, as in the owner of the business, is focused on doing one thing. And all the worker bees are doing all the other stuff that needs to get done. Now, the first instinct when people think about this is that, well, I'm on my own here, like I'm a one-man band. I don't have loads of worker bees working for me. But when you start to think about how this is applied, say, for example, you have an email, like we have ActiveCampaign. I think you have ActiveCampaign?
Yeah.
So I've got ActiveCampaign, which sends out my email list. I don't manually send out 2,500 emails twice a week. You know, I don't sit on Google Mail and go send, 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 send. I have a program that I write the email once and it sends out 2,000 emails. That's at the very low end how that theory works, is making sure you're not doing all the dog work.
Yeah. And I agree with that. And you get to a stage where you'll start to do, when in business, where you'll find those repeatable tasks that you potentially don't need to do as well. And then you can look at how either can they be automated or can someone else do them and then get that done.
Yeah. I mean, classic examples. I have an accountant who does all my accounts work. Do you have an accountant?
Yeah.
My accountant. Now people say, oh, I'll do my accounts myself. It's easy enough. Yeah. Okay. You do the self-assessment. No problem at all. Do it yourself. You know, get a fine for doing it wrong. I pay my accountant whatever it is a month. Nothing ever gets wrong. It's all done correctly. Saves me loads of time. It's a job I don't want to do. You know, I use Xero for my accounts. I have a coaching app that delivers workouts. I don't just send out all the workouts on a PDF or whatever else. All these things as part of that theory. It's getting rid of the jobs that are mundane that you don't need to do. And for example, we talked about ChatGPT the other day, you know, the AI thing. Classic example of moving towards that where, you know, you can tell it, write an email about these points in a humorous tone and it will churn out the email. Yeah, you've still got to probably edit it a little bit, but the dog work or the donkey work, I should say, is done for you.
Yeah. Yeah, all of these tools, use them. And use them if they're going to save you that time and money. Because I've spoken to coaches and worked with coaches as well who have gone, you know, if you just upgraded your Calendly here, you could solve this problem. Yeah, we don't want to spend any more money. I'm like, yeah, but it's going to solve this problem for you here. No, we'll just keep it as it is and we'll just keep doing the workaround that causes us problems and stress. Okay, cool. Nice one. It literally is going to cost you, I don't know how much the extra was. It was like £5 or £7 to solve a huge problem for you. just do it. Like, that's what they built these things for. It blows my mind sometimes. Okay, don't just keep buying things and subscribing to stuff just for the sake of it. But the ones that are worth it, I definitely use them.
Yeah, it's the balance between shiny object syndrome and stuff that really does help and really does save you money. Yeah, because obviously we've all been in the situation where we've got all these apps because the guru says that we need all these apps to do all this wonderful stuff. But actually, after a while, we figured out they only need like 3 of those 20 apps to really make things work.
Yeah.
So there is that balance, isn't there?
Yeah. I did chat GPT on Friday. I did a whole live, we built out a quiz. So we just didn't use the whole of the building work using ChatGPT from title through to description, through the whole thing, through to the marketing as well. Didn't go everything because we'd have been there for ages, but it shows that it probably would have taken, if you just did it on your own, 10 minutes to get everything. And that would have taken probably a couple of hours, maybe more, to build something like that. Because you're going in, you have to come up with all the questions yourself. You have to come up with all of the benefits, everything. And it was just going up. And then, yeah, it was really, really cool, actually, just using it for one of those things to save you time.
Yeah. And I think some people are, especially if you're a business owner, you're afraid of giving away control of certain things. That's certainly the problem I had. I used to do my own graphics and stuff for my social media. I've got a graphics guy that does all that sort of stuff now. I do the odd one or two bits, but he gives me the templates and I can adjust them and that sort of thing. That saved me so much time, so much stress. And obviously, I'm not a graphic designer, so mine looked pretty shit, whereas his stuff looks a lot better.
I'm a big fan of stuff like that. I think you get to a stage, don't you, where it's worth doing, because we've now got templates and things that are all custom to the brand and everything, and we've got color schemes and fonts and things. I don't think you need that to start with.
No,
because there's lots of people out there sending you these templates and content templates and things, which I've got a bit of mixed feelings about, because I think templates is a structure for what you want to use for your own content. Like, just have a few different ones that you want to use for maybe a carousel or whatever it is for your content, and have a similar theme that you use throughout. I think that's good, because then it's your own way of doing it and it's your own thing that you stay continuous with. But when you take someone who's gone, here's a package that we created with all your content already done, so then what you do is you're creating content that's not one in line with your audience potentially, and then everyone else has got the same content, so they're all posting the same thing. I just have mixed thoughts about that. From something that's supposed to make your life easier, could it then make your life more difficult?
Yeah, I mean, there's that point is that how much do you automate it, or how much do you template it? I mean, I'm agreeing with you here with the templates. I've got certain templates that I use for, say, my reel covers. I've got a template that we use for this podcast, which you might even be watching now on a clip. So I've got those templates, which every week I'll change the content in and out, but the same template is there. But I don't have 30 or 40 posts already done for me with all the information already in. I still add the information. I just use the template to change it around.
And you know what those posts are as well. They're all here's some coffee shop swaps you can do so you can not eat as much. And here's your high protein snacks.
Are bananas good for you?
Fucking winds me up. But anyway. Different.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on before you get into angry Dan mode. We haven't got angry Dan for a little while.
I did it last week.
Okay. And last one we've got on the list here, because we're coming up to the end of time, is create more than consume. This is something actually a few people I followed and done courses with have said about, and it's a thing that as entrepreneurs, as business people, we want to be creating more content to put into the world rather than consuming it. Would you agree?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Because every time you're consuming content, it's stopping you from actually taking action and creating stuff for your audience to consume themselves. Because otherwise, if you're just sat there consuming it all and then you're not putting stuff, you're your thought process behind the things that could actually help your audience create them.
Is the other side of that is that, and in terms of creating while they consume, people might be thinking, oh, you're talking about YouTube videos or whatever else, or Instagram slides. Well, actually, if we are consuming more content from other coaches than we are creating ourselves, it does add to that imposter syndrome thing, where it's like you're seeing all these fantabulous posts and this, that, the other, and someone's doing this, someone's doing that. You're like, maybe I should be doing that.
Yeah.
So consuming other coaches' content too much can then influence your content. So then actually your content is diluted because it's trying to be all these other coaches.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. It's a hard one, isn't it? Because you potentially might want to still follow some people in the industry, but then they're not your audience. So I would just be very careful of consuming their content and going, actually, oh, I'm going to create something like that. Because as soon as you do, even if it is a great post, it's not in line with your message and your audience. So you dilute everything you do. I see that happen quite a bit. But also, I follow a lot of accounts that aren't anything to do with the fitness space or the industry. And
I follow loads of meme accounts.
Yeah, or meme accounts, things like that, because that gives me so much more. I enjoy it, but also I get ideas and then I save stuff into different collections within my Instagram anyway. And I just pull ideas and inspiration from those. How can I tie that into my message? How can I create stuff? And that's been, again, probably the topic for another talk, but it's been really impactful seeing different styles from other industries being pulled into here and how they work. I definitely see some stuff working really well. So I'd encourage people to follow pages that aren't in the fitness space, see what else is out there.
Yeah, or mute down people who are, if you are a coach, mute down people who are also coaches who you're not in, you know. I don't know. I think there's only a few coaches that I actually properly follow. It can dilute your message, I think, is the thing we're saying.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Right, so that's our list that we had, and we're just bang on time. Anything to add that we've missed?
Yeah, the only thing I'd add, like, as an extra tip is, I mean, we've maybe touched on it a little bit, but like environment. So I have to have a set environment for where I'm working. So like, if I know I come in here, this is where I'm going to go and work, and then when I'm away from here, I will. And this is again a tip that was mentioned on Friday, but I've started doing this anyway. It was changing my clothes. So I have certain clothes to do my work in, and then I have clothes to just...
You stole that from me.
Did I?
It's the importance of being Batman. That's the thing.
Oh, well, I didn't, your stuff is around like the... I have heard you talk about that actually, where you're on stage and you talk about how you present yourself. Yeah. But similar, I suppose it is the same thing though, because when I'm finishing...
Yeah, it's not my technique. It's a well-known used technique. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think Ella brought it up on Friday as well. And I was like, well, I started doing that because, and maybe it was subconsciously to you, but I started to just change what I wear now to my just like I've got these like random pajama things, and you know, I just instantly feel different. So I'm like more relaxed.
It's the change of state. So I do this at home because I work from home, same as you. And when I finish work, I'll go and get into my lounge pants that I've got. They're basically just pajamas. But you're right. It's you're signaling to the body, like, and the mind that you finished a certain job and now you're doing another job, or like, as in you're doing another task.
Yeah.
And the way the importance of being Batman works is it's when you go into the gym. Like if you go to the gym in your work stuff, it doesn't feel right to train. But yet so many people do go into the gym in their like utilities and stuff like that. So much so that we stop that as a behavior at the gym, at my gym. So you can't come in and work stuff. It has to be gym stuff and it has to be clean, you know? So yeah, changing that state, changing your mental approach. Same as like, it might be as putting a hat on, because I used to have a hat for ministry. I got a cap, and I got a cap for what used to be BKM, my company. And if I was doing certain videos, I'd change the hat so that I knew at that point I was talking about stuff to do in ministry, or I was talking about stuff to do in nutrition. But it's the same sort of thing. If you signal to the body, it's an anchoring to a certain state. If you signal you're now in this state, you'll get better results than you will. And your work environment, Absolutely, 100%. So this is my desk where I'm at the moment. I don't eat here. I don't watch YouTube here. I don't do anything here apart from things to do with work. If I eat, I go downstairs and I eat my dinner, watch a bit of YouTube, and then I'll come back upstairs and I'm back into work mode. The change of state, and this is especially relevant if you are at home because you're just walking around in the same clothes and all that sort of stuff. You've got to have different locations where you do different things.
Yeah, definitely agree. Yeah.
Cool, that was a good one to finish on. Excellent.
Nice.
Cool, okay, so as always, thanks for everyone for watching and listening. Hope you got some good stuff about that. Any questions on anything we've raised, please do send us a message. And Dan, where can they send messages to on Instagram?
Instagram, Dan Strong Collective. Come and message me because I genuinely enjoy interacting on social media.
he said that was such a wooden expression.
I do. It's one of my favorite things, like having conversations, because I think that they get mistreated on social media. So I reply to every single message, comment. So come and say hello.
Absolutely. For me, it's Tom Blackman_nutrition or Tom Build Coaching on Instagram. We both got YouTubes. Mine's Tom Blackman. What's yours, Dan?
Dan Strong Collective.
Which you might already be aware of because this is going to be on YouTube as well as podcasts.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Dan, thanks very much for your time as always. And we will be back next week with another information-packed frenzy of episode. Is that right?
Sounds good.
Okay. See you next week, mate.
All right.